Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Brown Car Guy and Buddies. And in this one, I'm going to be talking to a very dear friend of mine, Muhammad Ali Humaid, over in the UAE in Abu Dhabi. In fact, he's been following me for a very long time. In fact, from the very first days of Car Middle East magazine in the UAE, and a long time supporter, but also a proper full-on petrol head who has also had a string of very interesting cars. So we're going to be getting into that. We're going to be looking at what he's buying, what he's selling, what he's got, but also a little bit of an insight into Emirati car culture. Muhammad Ali Humaid is also my very first Patreon supporter. He was the first person to jump on to patreon.com/Shahzad Sheikh. What is that? That's where you can sponsor my content and support creators such as myself with a kind of a subscription. And I always try to give everybody a name check at the end of my video content and my written content, which of course you can find on youtube.com/browncarguy and of course browncarguy.com. Make sure that you're subscribing to both of those, and also make sure that you're following me on all the social media channels. Just search for my hashtag, it's right there on my hat, hashtag Brown Car Guy. And of course, like I said, the Patreon stuff I'll get into a little bit more at the end of this video. Cool, it's going to be great to catch up with him. I haven't seen him for over a year and a half, so let's do this. Muhammad, assalamu alaikum. How are you doing? It's been like a year since I saw you.
Yes, it's been a while. It's been a while. Yes, it's been a year and 2 months, I guess.
All right. Are you counting?
Because I was in London in July of 2019. That was for work purposes, and we crossed by. That was in July. So, it's actually more. So it's like 1 year and 5 months now.
There you go. See, time flies, right? Time flies. Last time when we met, you were telling me that you were working on a project car. You had an old Jag. What happened to that?
Oh.
I remember we had a long discussion about that.
Interestingly, it's interesting you brought that up, but interestingly, most people were buying cars during the lockdown, right?
Yeah.
I guess the opposite was true for me. So during the lockdown, I end up actually selling cars. I sold three.
And which ones did you sell?
So I sold the Series 1, the XJ.
All right.
I'll come to the reasons behind that in a minute. The other one I sold was my Oldsmobile.
Oh my God, you sold the Oldsmobile.
Oh yeah?
Oh man, tell everybody what year was the Oldsmobile? Which one was it?
It was a 1971 Oldsmobile Cutlass.
Wow.
Had the 350, they call it the rocket engine. This is the original engine, original gearbox. The car was basically original, everything except for, the small accessories like the radiator and stuff. And
how long did you have that car?
I've had it since 2016.
Yeah, so quite a few years.
Yeah, quite a few years, so 4 years around that.
And what inspired you to buy an Oldsmobile? Was that like an old family thing? Did your family have one?
No, as you probably know, I loved muscle cars. I have always been into muscle cars. And, I had the 2012 Dodge Charger when I could afford it. And I wanted to have that classic VA, the feel of that classic VA. So I went to the Oldsmobile, and so basically, why the Oldsmobile? Nothing specific with the Oldsmobile, nothing specifically wrong with it as well, and nothing specifically charming, let's say, as well. So the main thing I wanted was the halo cars of the 1960s muscle cars, the Chevelles, the Mustangs, the Chargers. Who don't want any of those?
Yeah.
So I definitely wanted a 1970 Chevelle or 1969 or 70 Charger. Uh-huh. 68 Bullet would have been, something like that. Oh yes, that's the one.
That's the icon.
Going after Illinois and you see many Illinois kids on the street, I feel it kind of dropped and value and sentimental value at least.
Yeah. I wouldn't go Eleanor. I love Eleanor, but I would definitely go for the Bullet Stang. I think that's a bit more iconic.
It's simpler. Yeah. I think it's easier on the eye to look at somehow.
Yeah.
The perfect combination, I'm not sure if you will agree on me on this or not, because I think the perfect bullet would be one with a modern Coyote.
You know, if I had the funds, I agree with you, because you know what? If I had the funds, you know what I would do? You know those guys that in America, Classic Recreations, that do the rest of mod Mustangs. You know, yes. I don't think that they do a bullet because they mostly do Shelby and Eleanor lookalikes. But I would go to them and I'd say, I want one of your cars, but to look like the Bullet Mustang.
Just to get the skirts and the flash and keep it like a bullet.
That's it. And then drive it everywhere.
Exactly. I'm not sure about the powertrains they're using. Are they using the modern one? The modern 580?
I don't know if they use the mod, because remember the last time I drove one was about 10 years ago. So, and I think it was a crate engine at the time. So I don't think it was a modern
crate
one.
Engine. Okay.
Yeah, but the thing is, they were pretty usable. I mean, the idea was that it should be usable, you know, and I think that's pretty cool. And so what was the third car that you sold then?
2007 Honda Jazz.
Oh, yeah. Little Honda Jazz. Those are lovely little cars, Honda Jazz.
Lovely little car, exactly. It's very simple. But, you know, I bought it used, frankly, and I wanted a cheap runaround for the small grocery stuff. I didn't want to take the 5-liter Jag for all of these trips. So there was the Jazz. But after I bought it, I discovered that it had some issues. It kept on giving me a headache, and I knew someone who, you know, needed that car. He offered me the money. I said, okay, that's it.
So what have you got at the moment?
At the moment, I still have my XJ and the Patrol. Both VX.
Patrol or a Land Cruiser is a must, right? So tell everybody watching, why are those two cars so synonymous with Emirati families? Why is it an absolute must that you have to have the Land Cruiser or the Patrol? There must in every. I remember one time I was meeting an Emirati in Jumeirah, and I hadn't met him before. Yeah, so we arranged on the phone that we were going to meet up, and I said, "How will I know you?" And he said, "Oh, I'll be in the white Land Cruiser." And I just laughed. I was like, yeah.
You could have told me also one of those taxis or, you know.
Exactly.
It's the same.
So what's the connection with the Land Cruiser and the Patrol? What is the Emirati connection?
Well, there's the heritage part. Those cars were here a long time ago. And there is, of course, the reliability, because if you're talking only about the heritage, well, the Land Rovers have been there too, but they're not as common as the Land Cruisers, but there comes the reliability part.
Yeah.
So Land Cruiser and the Patrol, they're big because the local families are big. Mm-hmm. So those are accommodating. They are comfortable.
Yeah.
They're getting more and more luxurious.
Yeah.
And they're powerful off-road. They're really capable off-road. So with this combination, I think there's nothing to fault. And especially here in Abu Dhabi, more than in Dubai, the Patrol seems to be like the default car of choice for families. It's by default, just get a Patrol.
Yeah.
That's it. And they keep those small updates, which keeps it very, very competitive.
Yeah, they've introduced a new one now, haven't they, just recently?
They say it's a new one, but it's just a facelifted one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
have you had a look at it yet?
Well, on the streets, you see it everywhere. And you know, the thing in here is that once there is a new shape of a common model, all the existing common models magically will transform into the new one.
It's crazy how that happens.
Magically, all the 2019 ones would disappear and they would be replaced by 2020 ones.
Yeah. So, the question is, where do the 2019 models go?
Well, the Shazad, they're still there. They just changed the faces of them and showed them. That's right.
Right. There you go. Amazing. Yeah. So let's stick with the whole Emirati culture thing. I mean, we met when you won, I think you won a prize at Car Magazine, didn't you? Isn't that the first time we met?
I'm looking at it right now. Can I grab it for you?
Sure.
Hold on. There you go, mate.
Wow, that is amazing. You still got it. That's incredible.
It holds nice memory, let's say.
Yeah. And how old were you when you got that?
Okay. I was around, let's say, that was... So I think car was around 2006.
Yeah, right? 2006 to 2011, yeah.
Yeah, so that was like, I was probably 20, yeah. I would say. Yeah.
Wow. So and even at that time, you were regularly writing letters and contributing, you know, to the magazine as a reader. And I remember I said to you at the time, I said, you know, you were that knowledgeable and that eloquent that you could have considered a career as a car journalist. But where did that interest and where did that passion come from for you? How did you get inspired to do those sort of things?
You know, I've been asking myself the same question sometimes. And I'm not sure, you know, because definitely it wasn't a family thing. Definitely it wasn't a family thing. You know, it's not like one of those stories where someone is telling how his father used to take him to the workshop and they worked to the car. No, definitely it wasn't like that. But it started with an appreciation of the aesthetics of cars. Mm-hmm. And since I was young, yeah. And this is what drew me to Jaguars early on, mm-hmm. right? So remember in the early, late 90s, or late 90s, I would say, this is the time the interest started. So what was there? There was the German cars, which kind of, the BMWs looked really good, especially the 7 Series, the elongated one. The Mercedes, there was a nice S-Class, but the Jaguar really stood apart, right? Yeah. It had a kind of a classic theme to their cars, but the cars were modern underneath. Of course, I didn't know much about the underneath, but at that time, it really drew me to their shape. And the interest in Jaguars started from that time. Mm. Frankly, as a general interest in cars. And then,
I mean, it has a very feline shape about it. I mean, it's called a Jaguar, but there's definitely something that's kind of organic in the look, isn't it? Especially at that time, you know?
Yeah. So as a friend of mine puts it, there's when you look at it, there's, you kind of see a Jaguar's face in there. The animal. You don't know where exactly. Yeah, so the cars looked really different. And then after a while, I got interested in muscle cars because of all the reviews and all the...
But there's a big muscle car culture, not just in the Emirates, but throughout the GCC. I mean, in Kuwait, they are crazy for classic muscle cars.
Yes, of course. In Kuwait, there's a big... enthusiasm for classic muscle cars. In Saudi Arabia, there is a big market for the classic Chevys and trucks, generally. Not necessarily the muscle cars, but the trucks.
Yeah.
They are very crazy into them, and they go to very specific details into restoring them. Like I heard about a friend of mine talking about the 1976, one of those GMC pickups. I'm not fluent with the, you know, with the naming for them, but and there is a guy in Saudi Arabia who holds a very specific interior part.
All right.
A dash mounted something or an armrest. You know, it's something very tedious. if you think about it. But that, I think, came only during that year
on very
specific models. And that guy held it, and he wanted to keep it for himself, or if someone gave him the right price. And the right price meant something very high. So
But you know, in Saudi Arabia, that's bizarre, because normally they cover. I remember because I used to live there. They just cover up the dashboard with the felt and the tassels all the way through, and then they put the big cushion in the middle anyway. So I was like,
interesting. Yeah, but that's because of the weather, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To be fair, we had the same on our Honda Accord back in the day, because otherwise the top of the dashboard would either it would just faint, or it crack, or it would just warp, you know, because the heat was just so much, you know.
Right. So I was talking about my the thing with the Oldsmobile. So yes, I got the Oldsmobile, even though I wanted something else. But my thinking was, I wanted a Chevelle, but a Chevelle is at least four times as expensive.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing. A Charger took six times.
Yeah.
This will be it.
Yeah.
Yes, it was it. It had a beard. It was interesting for a while. But unless you fulfilled what you really wanted
in
the first place, there is an itch that stays. An itch. There is a spot.
You haven't scratched that itch yet. That's the problem. Yeah.
And that's, the conclusion from my different experiences. I bought an XJ6, and I think you were asking me what happened to that.
Yeah.
And some point down the line, while I was doing the calculations of where this is all going, I realized, you know what? What I love about Jaguars are really, as you said, the curvature shapes. And the epitome of that would be the E-Type.
Whoa. But
save up one day to earn myself an E-Type, that would be it for me.
That's it.
So I realized that there's
Coupe or Roadster?
I'm sorry?
Coupe or Roadster?
Definitely the coupe. The fixed hip coupe. Definitely that one. Either that or the 2+2.
Yeah.
Even those are less popular. Yeah.
But you know what? I would tell you, now is the time to get them, you know, because the values are skyrocketing on those. And at the moment, they're still, especially here in the UK, there's still tons of them around. You know, there's still plenty around that you could just about pick up. And there's lots of specialist companies that are fixing them up and restoring them. But yeah, I can see that. I can see their values getting like to Aston Martin levels in a few years' time, you know. So, yeah.
I think to some models they're already there, like the early E-types, because I was expecting this during even the lockdown. So the early model E-types, like the 3.8s, and there are specific models of them which had the bonnet latch outside. Those would go to stratospheric prices.
Yeah.
But the models that came later, like 66, 67. Mm-hmm. Those ones are kind of more affordable and more, I don't know, reliable, maybe not a good word.
No.
More usable, let's say. Okay.
Do you remember the movie? It's not Cannonball Run, it was another movie. I think it was Gumball. Was it the Gumball Rally or the Gumball movie? Maybe it was just called the Gumball, I can't remember. I'll look it up later, I'll put in the links or whatever. And everybody takes off. Because the race starts and everybody leaves the garage and they all take off. And the car that gets left behind is the E-Type, right? and throughout the movie, every now and then they cut back because they're across the country, they're near the finish line. And every time now and then they cut back to the garage, and the guys are still, they're still working on the E-Type, you know. You know, and at the end of it, they're like, they're swearing and cussing and they're throwing the spanners around. And they go, yeah, but it's a beautiful piece of engineering though, isn't it? It's like, and it just completely summed up, you know, the whole ethos of that car. And that was way back at that time, you know.
Yeah. Maybe this sums up the whole Jaguar thing, because even if you read the in-period reviews of the E-Type or the XJ6, they were basically describing them as superior to their competition in terms of performance, really. But the British Leyland quality, not so much.
Yeah.
they were built up to a budget.
Yeah.
And the engineering targets were high. They kind of achieved them, but they cut slack with the reliability and the usability.
The actual production, yeah. That's funny. That's why a lot of the restoration cars now, the cars that come, the resto mods and the restorations, are actually better than the car would have been brand new.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
So your plan now is to go for an E-Type. Are you still going to do the muscle car thing then?
Okay, here's another lesson I learned after my 2012 and the 2012 Charger and the 71 Oldsmobile. I think I'm getting older. And I need more comfortable
cars. Come on, you're only a kid. Come on, are you joking? Oh my God, yeah.
You know, no, joking. I am getting older, yes, but no. So what I really want is a car that has the echo of the classic car, that has the iconic shape of classic cars, but in a modern template with modern underneath, like
resto mode. So you need a resto. I mean, I'm with you on that. I love the idea of a classic, something that you look at and you just fall in love with it. But you don't have to put up with its foibles and its flaws, that exactly. you could just get in and drive it.
And also of the comfort.
Yes.
You want something to drive it for long. I'm not sure if you know where I live, but where I live is at least 50 kilometers from everywhere.
Right.
I mean, to Abu Dhabi, to downtown Abu Dhabi, that's 50 kilometers. And to Dubai, that's like 60 or 70. So I need a car that's comfortable.
Yeah.
For road trips, let's say. So
a Toyota Camry.
That would be perfect if it had a V8 and we until then. Probably the Toyota one or whatever they call it. Yeah.
So I know you're somebody that keeps well abreast of the latest developments in the car industry and what's coming out. What cars have caught your eye recently? There's been a few interesting releases in America in terms of trucks. We've got the Bronco and the electric Hummer. What's caught your eye?
Actually, what caught my eye the most was the Gordon Murray T50.
Oh, really? Did you see my interview with the legend who is Gordon Murray?
I watched it. That was on the top of my to-do list when I saw the news about that car. I mean, that car kind of sums up our conversation right now.
Yeah.
Right? So it's basically the classic formula, but then presented with the modern and industrial leading stuff, like the some kind of technologies and the aesthetics of it. I mean, the exposed gear shift.
That's
very beautiful. Yeah. Very beautiful.
And the fact that he's gone for a manual gearbox, where every other supercar maker is going, flappy paddles and dual clutch systems or whatever, but he's gone manual gearbox.
And a bespoke V12 in this day and age.
Wow.
A bespoke V12. That's a rarity.
Yeah.
And of course the other one will be the Eagle A-Type. I don't even know what they're calling them, but the coupe ones. Uh-huh. It's very beautiful. Very beautiful one.
So, we've spent most of this time talking about, V8s and muscle cars. And of course, if I'm talking, to anybody in the UAE, that would be a given. But obviously the big conversation here in the UK and in Europe is all about, alternative fuel and, electric cars and the future. And of course, recently we've been, just the other day, they've said that they're bringing forward the target of taking petrol and diesel cars off sale to 2030. So, essentially, from 2030, we'll only be able to buy electric cars or hybrids up to 2035, and then electric cars only. Every manufacturer now has electric cars. And when I was in the UAE, I saw some manufacturers were starting to bring them in. And that was a couple of years ago. Has there been any progress in that whole, not only the industry, but the perception and the culture when it comes to, electric cars in the UAE?
Definitely. Definitely. Well, look, I was one of the few, frankly, to look into this subject back at 2012, because I was doing...
You were particularly involved in this, weren't you? Because you were working in... Tell us about where you were working and what that represented.
Yes. So I was doing my master's degree in, at the time, what was called Masdar Institute. Now it's part of the Khalifa University. So I was... My thesis was basically to study the feasibility of applying and promoting the electric vehicles in Abu Dhabi. And at the time, one of the tasks, one of the things I did with the study is to survey the public knowledge and the public perception about electric vehicles. This was back in 2011, 2012. And basically, only few people heard about them. They were not sure what to expect, what they were, how they were used. And the ones that heard about them, they kind of saw them in Europe or US, but didn't have much information about them, you know. And there were even some funny questions raised from the audience when they heard about the electric cars, where they were they powered by big batteries, and they were thinking kind of the Duracell ones, you know. Kind of, you know, it was an interesting time. Perception has caught on a lot now. Now people are really considering electric cars for their daily transport, and I see Teslas quite often. Maybe not where I live, but more so in Dubai. Mm-hmm. There's even kind, I think I saw the other day a Tesla club, mm-hmm. and before the lockdown there was a Tesla club meetup at the Yas Mall.
Right.
So the knowledge about the cars has caught up a lot, and they're being promoted to some extent by the government here. Dubai is using them for their airport taxis.
All right.
I think there are other government entities in Dubai also using them, and there is a plan to use them in Abu Dhabi as well. So there's a promotion for those, and people are already buying in.
But do you know anybody in your friends and family that actually runs and owns an electric car?
Well, I know a friend, an acquaintance, basically, who not just runs an electric car, but established a company that installs chargers at homes.
Right.
That's a thriving business.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
Right now, yeah. So, it's definitely growing. One of the things that we found during the study at the time was if the electric cars in here were promoted enough by the government, that would mean some possible savings to the government. Why? Because we were heavily, or we still are, but to a much lesser extent, but at the time we were heavily subsidizing the oil, the fuel, yes, basically. So the switch to electricity would mean savings in that. So yeah, they were big spreadsheets and stuff like this, calculating the mm-hmm. the cost, and the result was that yes, for the guy,
and that's taking in mind the power required to charge them. Is that through solar power, yeah, or traditional power stations?
Traditional power stations. Mm-hmm. Traditional power stations. Yeah. Because we don't have much. There is the solar power now, but at the mm-hmm. time there was no. But still, I'm talking about economy. I mean monetary savings. Mm-hmm. For the government from the subsidy paid to fuel, but also if you look at it from the environment point, but that wasn't my concern because I was looking at it from a socio-economic perspective, not from technical. I'm not a tech savvy into the electric field, but what I did is a socio-economics, and I see promotion for the electric vehicles, but to be honest, I was expecting that by this time it would be more.
Right.
But it's growing, but slightly, probably due to some to Trump administration, basically slowing down on the alternative fuels and stuff.
So how's the UAE set a target then, like 2030, 2040, or whatever, to switch over to electric cars?
I think there's no such target
But the thing is that by osmosis, you'll end up with a target anyway, because if the rest of the world is switching to electric anyway, at some point you're going to go, well, we're going to run out of petrol and diesel. Well, you don't get diesel anyway, but you'll run out of petrol cars anyway. So at some point you'll have to consider switching that over, right?
Right. Probably it's happening, maybe sooner than we know.
Yeah.
But yeah. And interestingly, you know, Lucid Motors, Saudi Arabia has bought, I think, a majority stake in that, right?
Right.
Like, I'm not sure, like 30 or 40%, maybe more, I'm not sure. Yeah. But they hold a good stake in that. So there is a definite shift in mentality.
Yeah.
Probably to take that and apply it to the real life, this would take...
because my concern is, because I remember, like, the GCC in general, it's a hot climate. There are long distances and people drive fast everywhere with everything turned on. So the AC, the stereo, everything has to be turned on. And, you know, I don't know if you were following, but I was recently running the Honda E. It was the first time I was spending a few days with an electric car. And one of the things I found with that car was that the moment you turn the fan on, so the moment you turn the heating on, you lost about 20 miles because it would show you on the thing straight away. To me, I was like, well, I mean, okay, over here, I can put on a coat and I can turn on the heated seats and I can get away with it. But in countries like that, there's no way you're going to turn off the climate control. Just no way.
Right. I was speaking to a person in a Tesla dealer some months ago. And she mentioned that they're no longer bringing the 60 kilowatt hour one. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, the car was not hoping very well in terms of range with the claimed range versus what's happening in real life, especially if you're going during August from Abu Dhabi to Al Ain, it's a tour on the island, and Al Ain is very dry and hot. So they're no longer bringing that one. They're only bringing the higher echelon ones.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's more to your point, but I think what's happening right now, the way the industry is going, is that these are like teething issues, right? Whenever you have a new technology, there will be some teething issues, and I think they're getting somewhere, and probably with the new administration in the US, it'll promote again the alternative fuels development and will enforce some regulations to force the manufacturers on the turn to go in this direction. So I think that will be, now you have a Hummer Electric, who would have thought that?
Yeah. To be honest, that looks like a pretty cool car.
It does look cool, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think that might do well in the Middle East. I think that would do well, you know. It's extraordinary. So do you see yourself buying an electric car at some point? Do you see yourself buying an electric car at some point? Mr. Classic Muscle Car Guy?
I was just going to say that it would be interesting if there was an electric E-Type.
There is.
Probably for an E-Type, yes. Now, purists would definitely want to crucify me on this, but maybe for an E-Type, yes. Maybe for muscle cars, I'm not sure.
You remember... I'll probably get this wrong. Prince Harry. Prince Harry drove it.
Yes, the E-Type Zero.
And the wedding, exactly. Yeah. So there is, and there are companies here that will do that as well. They will make electric E-Types.
Depends on the character of the classic car. You see, like the muscle cars, I think that their character is based around their hearts. Mm. You know, those thundering hearts, the V8s.
Yeah.
Kind of, if you remove that, you're left out with, I don't know. For me, it doesn't work. But if you go to the other cars, like the E-Type, yes, it has a magnificent engine, and this engine has a lot of victories in Le Mans, stuff like that. But the car as a whole works.
Yeah.
It's not based around an engine. You can't say that the E-Type was based around its engine. The E-Type was based around all of its engineering just working together in harmony. And if that could be replicated with an electric powertrain, that would be great. And of course, the let's talk about the Rolls Royces and the Bentleys.
Yeah,
those are cars that are famous for wafting along. If you can replace their powertrains with electric, I think that would be that would make it even more serene inside.
That's right.
So why not? But for the muscle cars, I am not sure.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. So that's, I think that's a brilliant place to end, because we've gone full circle, because we started talking with muscle cars and E-types, and now we've come full circle and we're talking about electric E-types. So I will be on the hunt for an electric E-type for you. I'll let you know as soon as I find a good one. So we can.
I'm not sure what kind of funds I would need. Maybe I would need a bank and I want a crew to afford that one.
you might need a little bit of financing, but anything's possible, right? But dude, it's been so wonderful to catch up with you. It's been so good, and thank you so much once again for doing this, and thank you once again for being, you know, one of my most solid and first Patreon supporters. You've actually started the ball rolling on that one, because now, you know, quite a lot of people are signing up. So thanks so much for doing that.
Thank you. No problem. Of course, I'm honored to do that, Shazad. I'm enjoying your content and I'm happy to pay for it.
Thank you so much, mate. Cool. I tell you what, hopefully we'll see. I'll see you. Maybe hopefully I'll come there, or next time you're over here. I can't wait to catch up with you again. But thanks so much for doing this. And take care, buddy.
Inshallah. You too. Thanks, man. Bye.
Wow, wasn't that fantastic? It was so good to catch up with him, and also to get this incredible insight into car culture in the Middle East, the GCC, and of course the UAE. But also, it's interesting, isn't it? Because of the work that he's done, or the studies that he did into looking at how, you know, the future of motoring is going to pan out in the GCC. That was quite a fascinating insight. I thought a little bit of a bonus there. That was really, really good. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Let me know what you thought of that conversation, what your thoughts are of motoring in the Middle East, and also where the future of that lies, in the comments above, below, elsewhere, wherever you can around this video. And of course, also make sure that you are subscribing to youtube.com/browncarguy. Make sure that you're subscribing to browncarguy.com. Make sure you're following me on all the social media channels. Just search for my hashtag. It's right there on my hat there. #browncarguy. And that's on Instagram, Twitter, and of course on Facebook. And of course, join Muhammad Ali Humaid, the very first Patreon supporter, on patreon.com/ShazadSheikh. And there you can support my content, sponsor my content from as little as $2 or £2 a month. And for that, you'll get a name check. I mentioned at the end of my written content and here on my video content, which is what I'm about to do, Muhammad Ali Humaid have already done. And next up is Partha over in India. Find him on parthans.com. He does a lot of tech consultancy stuff, so he's really good for that. He's helped me actually build up this YouTube channel, and I have had a conversation with him as well in this Buddies series. There's also Tom Conway Gordon right here in the UK, who's also featured in my Buddies series. And there is Isaac Beauchard over in America. And if you're looking for a really cool car, check his website out, bespokeautos.com. There's also Reza Adil here in the UK, and he's all about cigars. So look him up on Instagram at alizarde.cigars. And the link should be coming up here in case I get any of these wrongs, and also below in the description. Next up, Muhammad Qasim. Find him on HMS.com. And finally, my latest patron is Siraj Abbasi, and you can find him on virtuosodesign.london. They do these incredible wall coverings, tilings, floorings, this sort of stuff. I've seen it. It looks amazing. Proper luxurious, high quality stuff. So do go check those guys out as well. If you can join this lineup, that would be absolutely fantastic. It helps me to do this sort of content, and if you enjoy it, then please try and support it as well. If not, please make sure that you hit that like button, comment if you can, of course you're subscribing, and please do share it as well. Thanks so much for watching, and I'll catch you all again soon in the next video.